interesting story, you might as well begin. Interesting story about Kazantzakis.
Related to this book.
When he died.
At the funeral, he was
in a coffin and the service was over and they were ready to put him in the ground. And a stranger came up.
He had not been at the service.
A stranger came up, a very big fellow, peasant, picked up the coffin all by himself and put it into the grave and walked off. And that's always been
historical myth.
That the description of the fellow was very much like this book. And he picked the coffin up all by himself and put it in the grave and walked off. Kind of a nice story.
It's, yeah, it's true.
I'm
always enjoyed
that. I just finished, stayed up last night for about 1, I think it was, and then got up this morning. Just been a little tonic.
What do you have to say about it?
Resembled good prose, carefully ordered, sober, free from superfluous ornament, powerful and restrained. It expressed all that was necessary to the greatest economy. It had no flippancy, no artifice about it. It said what it had to say with a manly austerity, but between the severe lines one could discern an unexpected sensitiveness and tenderness in the sheltered hollows. The lemon and orange trees perfumed the air, and from the vastness of the sea emanated an inexhaustible poetry. That is a way I take this book, because I think it's any poet has got a long way to go, over against some of the writing in this book. Poetry is to be good prose, at least good prose, and this book will give us a run for our money, the writing. And magnificent passages in it. So as a novel, I think it is, it's in a sense, it's like Zorba, though, as a novel. It's like the novel began, in a sense, it's a story of significant people. And this is almost an archetypal novel. And then from this, one gets more specialized forms of novels. But in a sense, I feel like this story is told. Somewhere back around 1200, it was really written way back, like about the time of Chaucer. There's that storytelling quality in this thing, it's to spin up this tale of these two characters, I don't know whether Kazantzakis was acquainted with Canterbury Tales, and I don't know if when he refers to the miller's wife, he's referring to the miller's tale, which is hilarious, but he says that the reason is like the backside of the miller's wife. And so it could very well be Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, because I believe she, in that story, didn't she go to relieve herself out the window? And she wasn't the one that got hit with the poker, though, was she?
Yeah. He was the other fellow when he went out.
Yeah.
He got hit with a red eye iron poker. A lot of earthiness in literature that you can be fun to catch up to. But I think there is some in here. Do you recognize any echoes in the other books that you've read? Connections of books, other books this year?
Becker.
Becker, I would say, and the way he relates to that? What? No.
Brothers K. reminded me.
What in Brothers K?
There was one point where he talked about, why did the children die and the old people go on living?
Do you think that was an intentional connection? What was the name of his book?
Dimitri.
Yeah, I wondered about that.
It is an intentional connection with Brothers Karamazov and Zorba. You have a sense of the line from Schiller, you know, the world is the altar of God, to the one kind of man and to the other, the insect, sensual lust, and you've got these two crazy conflicts. In a sense, Zorba is a Karamazov spirit. So there's in a sense of rewriting that. Any other book?
Woman of
Andros. Woman of Andros, what
way? Well, mostly I think just countryside, but also almost style of description. I don't know. I kept trying to say, well, why? And I didn't ever come up with very clear.
Well, the theme of death is very clearly in this book, in Andros, and in the sense that book that we began the year with could be maybe a book to read after reading this. But I don't want to get too much into that before you guys talk some more. Any other books?
He reminded me of kind of Lawrence. Does he, you know, I guess, I find D.H. Lawrence to be a little sensuous writer, too. You know,
sure.
When I started reading, I said, oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's really, you know, really good.
That's right. Maybe the way what Lawrence can do with an embroidered rose on the blouse of his mother is unbelievable. And Lawrence does have it all. It makes it a little shimmer at times. There is that quality here. What other, any other books that we've done this year, talked about this year, make connections?
There's just one line that reminded me of the sentence you have, where he said, I watched and listened without saying anything. I could feel another leaf falling from my heart. In passing of another year, I was taking another step into the ground. And he talks about Dante.
Yeah. You've got Dante.
That really makes me wish I could read all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of Dante. Well, that can be in your future. And it's interesting for the boss's relationship to Dante. It's a very interesting one. To where, in some ways, it's part of the sickness that he has. And I won't talk too much more about that, but...
What was it? He said that good lawyer, but when he was talking about Dante, bringing up the common source so that they were seeking no salvation.
Mm-hmm.
That was just such a good line.
Yeah.
I never thought of poetry as lyricism. It tied in with what you said about those caving and by the truck drivers in Russia.
Mm-hmm. I like that. That particular passage is something that Dante can't be. What? How does he respond to Dante? What is Dante to him? Well, his pocket Dante. What is it at the beginning?
It's a devotional book.
Devotional book? Now, go on further.
Where he has to find a couple lines to give the flavor to his day.
Yeah, okay. That's the positive part of it. But what, in that same passage, that positive passage where he says it was like, it gives the whole flavor to the day, what else is involved in it? What points does he reach to the talk of Dante?
When he's trying to escape something?
Right. Whereas it can be something that lifts up, he's taking it and dives into it. Hides. Inside of life, he realizes it's too much, and then the truth goes back into inferno, or purgatory, or paradiso, and he gets this sense of his power by doing that. But what he really is doing is something that's weak. See? And he happens in life, and then he, you know, it's making him feel small, and then he pulls out his pocket universe, and he opens it up to a favorite passage, and tucks himself into that passage for the day. And so that's part of the problem Boss had, at least at the beginning. Other books. Other things we've read. This is yet another book that has the line, unless a seed fall on the ground and die, it cannot have life or remain alone. This is another one. It's got that very important place in the book. Almost all the books, I mean, around that theme, I think you can say this whole program is in order, around that one passage. How about Kutra? Is that a connection that everybody was making? Look on 248. The widow has been killed. Boss Zorba goes out through the night. But how does Boss respond to that? I lay down in my bed, turned out the lamp, and once more began in my wretched, inhuman way to transpose reality, removing flesh, blood, flesh, and bones, to reduce it to the abstract, to link it with universal laws, until I came to the awful conclusion that what had happened was necessary. And what is more, that it contributed to the universal harmony, the harmony that Ivan talks about that he resists. I arrived at this final and abominable consolation. It was all right that all that had happened should have happened. What's happening there, at least at the Karamazov inversion? Pineapple compote is, it's nice that the 4-year-old child, hands are cut off. It's all right that what happened should have happened. The widow's murder entered my brain. I think, one of the greatest passages in the book. The widow's murder entered my brain, the hive in which for years all poisons had been changed into honey. And through it, in the confusion, through the hive in the confusion. But my philosophy immediately seized upon the dreadful warning surrounding it with artifice, and quickly made it harmless. In the same way, bees encase the starving drone in wax when it comes to steal their honey. That image has got to be one of the most negative in the world. A few hours later, the widow was at rest in my memory, calm and serene, changed into a symbol. She was encased in wax in my heart. She could no longer spread panic, anxiety, and paralyze my brain. This terrible events of the day broadened, expanded into time and space, and became one with the great past civilizations. The civilizations became one with Earth's destiny. The Earth was the destiny of the universe. And thus, returning to the widow, I found her subject to the great laws of existence, reconciled with the murderers, immobile, and submitted. Later, at the bottom of the next page, that is what Zorba, in this
stage of self-consolation which I had reached, I was once on the point of speaking about the widow. The widow stretched out his long arm and put his big hand over my mouth. "Shut up," he said. I stopped ashamed. "That is what a real man is like," I thought, envying filled with sorrow. A man with warm blood and solid bones who lets real tears run down his cheeks. When he is suffering, when he is happy, he does not spoil the freshness of his joy by running it through the finest sieve of metaphysics. One of Eliot's basic themes. Grishkin, the Russian lady, the courtesan, in Whispers of Immortality, distills a feline smell that he both draws and he draws him on and he resists it. And then he ends home, we crawl between dry bones to keep our metaphysics warm. But he's going to resist that, going to take the punch out of life, the sorrow and the joy. Pray. I lost beauty in terror. I lost beauty in terror in the Inquisition. I lost my senses. Taste, feel, smell, touch, sound. How can I then make contact with you, Christ? And Geronimo, remember this line? And this is what's happening at this point. Lost beauty in terror in the Inquisition. Cut off and being able to respond to life. Very, very much a Kubrakian character. Boss is early boss.
Marriage, but
boss, it's Young Zorba. There's a battle between Young Zorba and Old Zorba. And he's attempting, you know, it's a battle in two ways. One, Zorba is trying to always be Young Zorba. And in the other hand, Zorba has done some sifting over the years, and is in a actual combat with that Young Zorba, too. But that he is relating over against the image of the Young Zorba, the eternal 20-year-old Greek. How many of you have been in Europe or seen some of these Greeks, these 20-year-old Greek men? You know, makes you feel, I mean, makes me as a man feel pretty pale and very low. You know. Remember some Greeks that lived in the, we were living above a garage, and they were living in the garage, and they were workers in Austria. My goodness, these guys came, you know, about the time they were 12 years old, they were, like they were the image of the hard wreckers, you know, of the world. good luck. But anyway. But the image of the dancer, that tremendous passage on the dancer. The dancer of that year has come down out of the mountain, the shepherd, and he does this magnificent dance. Zorba sits there and looks at him. Zorba is one of the dancers. And that image of the eternal 20-year-old Greek male BC character was the image of his own life. And at least from Chernia, you've got a different, you know, you say, what person then do we pick, according to Chernia, to have a life is one which is personal. This is pick the person of Christ. Two things. That Zorba, what would Zorba say about that? Zeus passed. Zeus came down and serviced all these sad ladies who were down on the earth, you know. He'd come down and just empty himself until finally he just couldn't walk or move anymore, and then he broke. And then his heir, Christ, came down, saw what women had done to his old man, or the old man, and then said, stay away, you know, from all that kind of stuff. That's Zorba's understanding of what Christ was, you know, about. We are in a position where we can do some talking story. And it does Christ call us to love his life. I think all of the things we've read this year have some connections. I don't think they have to believe in anything else. I think go back and, you know, as you read this, I don't think this is a book that I think. Well, all the books are rereadable, and I've read them all about 6-7 times in this one. It's a joy to read this book every year. And it's getting to the point where I was telling Ted about how it's sort of like the joke in prison. The prisoners told the same old jokes so much that they gave the jokes numbers, as just to speed things up, I mean, so that they could say, you know, he'd get out there and then he could tell more jokes in a shorter length of time. He'd go out in the yard to walk and then say 17 and Well, now after reading a book so often, I can actually, in about 2 hours, read the book. You know, just, and I just, see that kind of devastating. It is a tremendous first, it's a great book to read just before spring. It's also dangerous. Mm-hmm. Also dangerous. What are you laughing about? Why is this a dangerous book?
I read the first one about 2 years ago, and then the reason I say it's dangerous now is because I didn't see the danger then. I read it and I said, yeah, that's how we're supposed to be. And I was completely taken by what I was reading. And I didn't see any other side. And so I just said, passion, yeah, okay.
Go for it.
And when I was reading it this time, I was seeing another side a lot more, but I was still getting passionate and involved with the book. Yes, I want to be with Zorba, like Zorba. Do what he does, and it doesn't really matter what I do, it's just so I do it passionately.
Yeah.
And I was able to take it in by it.
Well.
That's my day.
You know, I think we're used to such pale copies of men. Women too, if you don't want to just do it on women. I mean, there's a female counterpart to Zorba here too, I'm sure. That's the book I'm going to write. But no. Oh, if you only knew. Anyway, we're used to such pale copies. I think the world of personage we're not used to meeting many people whose are really there. Remember the woman of Andros, thin-natured people who live in I realized when he met Andros, when Pamphilius' father met Andros, the woman of Andros, he said, or Croesus, you know, I realized that I would live in a world, you know, of people with thin-natured, that somehow was almost as if most people were two-dimensional, you know, like drawn, the images, two-dimensional, and then every once in a while you meet a three-dimensional person that is really itchy, and Zorba is one of those guys, and I think that's something that Kazantzakis is trying to do too. You get Boss, who's in a sense flattened himself out to two-dimensional, you know, at the beginning, and then you have Zorba next to him, and he just sort of overpowers him. You've got this well-trained Boss, and then you've got this uneducated Zorba who comes up with a, you know, instant wisdom many, many times. The Zorba is really a challenge to us, I think, because it's he is so lively that a lot of our own the fact that we've allowed ourselves to be rather deeply thin natures, he draws us out. It's like the gravity of the man. Or I should say the levity is trying to make something in us really come out that we haven't seen in a long time. Although I don't think we'd respond to Zorba in a positive way unless we have some of that in our lives, so it isn't that we're without it. We have had our moments. And actually, we've had our moments of passion, and being past passion, we can then say, well, I want that again. And we confuse the thing, because passion is a non-calculated response, but then we can say, I know I can feel passionate if I do these things. And then we can then go out and do them. And is that passion? What would you call that? There are many ways that we can be get excited. But it's a different sort of thing, isn't it? Does that make any sense? So we have been passionate. And when we were passionate, we responded completely to the something, whether it be, you know, strawberries or there's mountains or people or whatever, ideas, whatever. And then we liked that. We confused the thing that was good about that is the feeling about it rather than the content of what was going on. And then the world just gives us, and you can go to any magazine and find out advertised methods for to help you get the feeling of your compassion, which is excitement, without the content.
Now, something else that was different about Sarva was that he wasn't thinking about himself so much. He was always thinking about the other person. Or it seemed like, you know, when we go to all these women and stuff, it was the woman that was alone in bed, not because of some of the great things he was doing.
He was, maybe some of that is part of his rationalization too, but he certainly was with, I mean, I think you can't say about, when Zorba's digging coal, Zorba's coal, when he never read books, but I mean, there is a way of reading books that I hope everybody does, that when you're doing that, you become that. And when you're drawing, you become one with thing that you're doing, and then when that comes across, you become a three-dimensional character yourself when that happens. And one of the things is that I think the women in the book are used to such thin people, so they didn't feel that. That's something where he had over and against the other men in the book, that maybe the women it made you feel three-dimensional too. And despite the fact that you came to be out of town the next day, some of those people said, well, we're thankful for the memory of having met someone. Now, that's part of the danger of the form. The danger of observer's character. He moves very fast through this book, doesn't he? He goes very fast. Could you be Zorba in a small Iowa town? Would you?
Sure.
How long?
How long?
Yeah.
Until then.
How long could you be? Yeah. You go over to Mrs. Johnson, and then you go over to Mrs. Peterson, and then you go over to your home.
Could you meet Zorba anywhere?
You could meet him anywhere, I think, but I guess one thing that Zorba moves in a very quickly through the world, doesn't he? And he says at one point, I ran. Remember? He ran, and I haven't stopped since. And when I am moving that fast through the world, I never see damage. Why did he start running? why did he start running? Can you remember what made him start running? Right now I've got two scenes confused in my head. It was either when he went and cut the priest's throat, you know, and then saw the children, and then ran. Or, I think that was when he started running. But another scene later, he went and, yeah, when the boss is asking if he'd ever been in war, and he says yes, and then he tells him this, you know, the stories, and then he goes into, he says about this one woman who came in, the widow, and came in and spent a night with her and then left and came back the next day and burned her alive. And what did he say? He blamed it on his country. He said, damn that country, you know. I went back the next day and just said part of the whole village and burned her up. Was it the country's fault, really? You have to listen to Zorba. I mean, his tone of voice is so appealing that sometimes you can miss some of the things he's saying. But you can be a Zorba anywhere in terms of the passion, I think. And yet, some of the ways Zorba expressed that passion, particularly with the ladies in his life, in a small town, you know, Mrs. Johnson and Mrs. Peters. Before husband and sugar. It got to Mr. Peters. You see? And now I make a big deal of that because our society is one which we're highly mobile. As long as we keep moving, we don't see the damage. We can go to Minneapolis and do this, and then be out in Fargo and do this, and then go over to Seattle and do this, and go to Holden and do that, and just keep moving. And we never see the damage. We never see the children. We never see the. Well, I don't want to go into that right now, but there's time for some other things that we don't see, too. But you be, you know, we asked the question, you know, in the Karamazov discussion about, you know, which of the brothers would the women here be interested in? And, you come up with sort of a high note. Where do we go? You know, something about the Dmitri character that's appealing. You know, what should we ask this question here? What kind of man is interesting? The Zorba or Bala?
Okay.
Huh?
No character.
Bala, of course.
Yes.
is that feeling that most had? No? Why not? Are there some things like, what would Gloria Steinem say about Zorro? She, no way, huh? And yet, isn't there some kind of appeal?
Oh, yeah.
In the heels up sort of way?
What?
In the heels up sort of Dmitri way?
Yeah. I've met several characters in my life, it's just been amazing for me to sit and think about the relationships I've had in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been sort of like, how it affects you and how it feels in the time. Well, I guess that, how Zorba appeared to the women in this book. They would have heard all the things he says to Bach. That's what makes me ill. Okay.
What?
So much the way he talks about women.
The way he talks about women.
Yeah.
The way he
said.
Yeah. What?
But I suppose it. And I can see that.
But hearing some of the things he says is a real thing. One of the things, I mean, this is just, are the things that Zorba says about women, let's give three options. False. True. Have to. Which do you think? What?
Have to.
Yeah. And is that maybe going to be a problem with Zorba? And it's something that we should think about when we hear Zorba say some other thing. No. You say no. Yeah. Why?
Let me think about it for a minute, but I don't think that.
Okay. But that sense of the half truth. Why do you say that?
I The women that he has come in contact with for the first time in the book, I've only read half of it. But they seem to be, like you said, flat, two-dimensional characters. And I see a lot of people like that, not just necessarily women, but, so, in that respect, yes, but also, I think the majority of women might be like that, but then there's always the Zorba-type women, too. And I don't think that he, at least in the first half, hasn't come in contact with them.
Well, he does. You know, yeah, you're right, and then later on he does. That most of the women that he's involved with respond to meet Zorba on his own ground.
Well, he's got that marvelous line about how men and women are mules, they're all mules. They don't have the sex, in a sense, they've lost their sex.
Yeah.
He talks about how pale most people are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But when he talks about woman, he's not referring to those people. In his statement, when he says woman is this, he's not talking about two-dimensional people. As he, have you come into the context where he's saying, well, woman is this like her spouse?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when he says woman, he's not referring to boss type women. He's referring to sort of our type of woman. This is it. This is his statement of what women are like. And what you should then do with women. I mean, if I was a woman and Zorba came up and grabbed me, I'd probably sock it. But that, I'd sock it because I'm really a man, I suppose. But there is this sense of just, wait a minute. On the other hand, there's something true about that, being grabbed and hitting and go and blowing the gun. Again, I think maybe the best way to think about that is that we're living in such a, you know, a two-dimensional world, and two-dimensional men and women, that, you know, even though it's only appealing to half of you, at least it's appealing. Does that make any sense?
Well, it's doing half the time.
Half the time, yeah.
I can remember being pulled by both characters. I mean, that would be battling, but reading the whole book, you know. One minute to be Zorba, next minute to be the boss. And probably the high point of that is when the boss finally gets up enough guts to, you know, the widow, you know, that whole scene.
Yeah.
My word, he's going, go for it! No! You know. Just, you know, that kind of a battle all the time. I remember that very distinctly. They're both attractive.
Yeah, yeah. And especially, I think Voss is not as bad as he says he is. That's something to remember. What he'll say about himself, he'll say, oh, his life was everything he did. He does have a good deal of going.
And Zorba says that at one point, too. He says, you've been ruined by books, but you need to get
lucky. Yeah.
Who is this character that the boss writes to?
Prentice.
That friend never comes.
It doesn't come back. No. There are more letters later on, but they do not get to the old.
I think what he expresses in those letters is just kind of the opposite of what he sees, how he sees himself.
The way he works that, three letters in a row. The guy in Africa, his friend, and then the letter from Zorba. And you could, I mean, if essays haven't been written about those three letters in literary criticism, you know, they should be. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful setup that he's done. And, you get three different takes on how one should live.
are coming out, and there are three characters each living a different way, and it's meant different things. In some ways, his friend is Byron.
What?
Byron. Lord Byron, the romantic poet who went to fight in Greece and died of pneumonia. This guy dies of pneumonia. He gave it away. But he dies of pneumonia, this friend of his. In some ways, there is Kazantzakis is pulling a number of characters in this book. It's interesting, you mentioned that Easter thing. There's something that he says, though. Caesar, before he goes to deal with the widow, says, it took my breath away. She's a wild beast, I thought. She knows it. But poor, vain, absurd, defenseless creatures men are to her. She is fat and voracious, just like some female insects, the praying mantis, the grasshopper, the spiders, and she must too devour the male and dog. You know. That passage in that section, this is the first year I've read it. I'd never seen that before. Whoa, what? You know? It's a funny sort of Easter that happens. And that business of no, yes, no, yes, it's just really, it's so much. You know, my opinion on it. And then something happened, he wants to cheer for the guy. And the other half says, hey, guy, no. Hey, don't. And there are some things right for me to say about that. We have to talk more on it. But what is who is he? Someone? Who is he? It says in the back of the book, he's every man with a Greek accent. Time magazine. That's what could be a lot of junk. Zorba has been acclaimed as one of the truly memorable creations of literature, a character in the great tradition of Sinbad the Sailor, who he calls himself. Well, Boss says he's Sinbad, and he also says he's Sinbad. I haven't read Sinbad the Sailor, but imagine. Falstaff, Sancho Panza, and the book as a modern classic person with passing and joy of life. Zorba is a figure created on a huge scale. His years have not dimmed the flame by which he lives, the gusto with which he responds to all that life offers him, whether he is supervising labors of mind, coping the mad monks in the mountain, embellishing the tales of his past adventures, and making love. Well, who is this guy?
Afraid to express? Is he in all of us?
Well, he should.
I think we all respond to, there must, I mean, you don't respond to something that's completely foreign to you. So in other words, I have to know some of this in myself before I can really connect with it. So it's in a sense that, he is. He is something in us, whether we're men or women. And women, I don't think, you know, the passages, if you leave aside the passages, specific passages on women, or you invert them, flip them over, talk about men that way, because that's another way he talks to men. Zorba really doesn't think men are much different, does he? But there is something in all of us there, and what is that? What is that? What we should be like? Is Zorba an image in all of us, or is Zorba does the real John Robert look like Zorba? How do I respond to some character like this? It's so appealing in many ways. Well, what do I then do? You said, I want to go out and live like that. Live like Zorba. Look on page 67. Tell me what you do with the food you eat, and I'll tell you who you are. Some turn their food into fat and manure, some into work and good humor, and others, I'm told, into God. So there must be three sorts of men. I'm not one of the worst, boss, nor yet one of the best. I'm somewhere between the two. Between the people who turn food into fat manure, and between the people who turn food into God. Maybe be the person, what I eat, I turn into work and good humor. That's not too bad after all. They looked at me wickedly and started laughing. As for you, boss, I think you do your level best to turn what you eat into God. If you can't quite manage it, that torments you. The same thing's happening to you as happened to the crow. What happened to the crow, Zorba? Well, you see, he used to walk respectably, properly, well, like a crow. One day he got it into his head to try to strut about like a pigeon. From that time on, the poor fellow couldn't delight in to recall his own way of walking. He was all mixed up, don't you see? He just hobbled about. When I look at Zorba and respond to that, is that my real way of walking, or would my attempt to be like Zorba be a hobbling about?
Is that one of the avenues involved with the specified way that's going to work?
going to work right with Zarda.
If there's anything about Zarda that's interesting, it's that this is a person, and this is a particular kind of person. You don't get the sense that there's a role too much. That's some of his attraction. But then I can turn him into a person. I can get a Zarda, an idea of Zarda from my own. And it's not of my, not me, but him. And then I can try to copy that. And that's second hand. Where they're picking the personage is something that creates a hobby.
It's just going to be exciting. To me, going after living a life like Sharon, I'm sort of start thinking, how can I do more than so? About getting kids out of there.
Six seconds.
Would be going for the excitement of their response. I want to live a life that's that exciting. And now I can probably be feeling like I'm just about to get done. And the question, you know, how can I respond more to life? It's like a different question than how can I be more to life?
It's a problem with the human spirit more than it is a problem with what particular things you may be doing. And that's the problem. Here, I'll look at him and then I say, I want to be like Zorro. Now, how do I be like Zorro? What did he do? But he did this and this and this. And I go out and do those things. And I'm excited, but I'm not, you know, it's not much Zorro passion going on there. But I'm doing all this, these kinds of things. And I'm a cartoon. Really. And Zorro would have taken me by the seat of the pants and thrown me into the seat, I'm sure. In response.
That's what
it is. You made yourself a toy.
As much as Boss admired Zorro, he didn't try and copy him. And that was one of the things that kept striking me, was that, you know, that would be my temptation to be emulated. To be living with someone like that, I try to be. And Boss would retain his own identity.
Does Zorba ever calculate? Oh, that, yeah.
No.
He doesn't ever calculate his way toward passion, or this kind of thing. And I think that, you know, that to follow Zorba then is can be a matter of calculation, where he says, well, I'll do this and this and this and this, and I'm calculating a certain fact. And he never did that. One of the things about him is, as Carl said the other night, is the expense of living in the moment. You know, when you are living in the moment, you aren't calculating, you don't go out to try to get this match. And he didn't really do that, ever. And that's the secret to his own passion. It wasn't secondhand, it was not a calculated thing. It isn't something that he wanted. I mean, he didn't necessarily go out and want to have anything. He was a certain way, and then where he was, he responded to where he was. In ways, and he felt passion, he felt suffering passionately, and he felt pleasure passionately, and joy. He felt death passionately, didn't bury it, didn't turn it into an abstract idea at all. I mean, I think to know that keeps us, you know, our own problems then are something, you know, a problem of the human spirit, and not because I'm not behaving, doing these things that he's doing. But something's happened to my spirit where I don't respond. Anything but an abstract way. Oh, those are stars. That's an abstraction. That's when you allow language to encase the reality, solid reality, into something that can wax.
John, do you think that Christianity sometimes stifles passionate response that we have, say, for all like hatred? You know, Zorba, I would imagine if he hated someone, he would really. do you think Christianity stifles that in us? And if so, do you think that's good?
I know that's the way we interpret Christianity. Now, it's an interesting connection. I just said about Zorro. Okay. There's a problem with the spirit. It isn't that now I should go out and do these things that Zorba does, and therefore I will be Zorba. That's a mistake we make. Well, on the other hand, you take an interpretation of Christ, and you can say, well, what did he do? And then we say, well, he did this and this and this and this. The way I become a Christian is to do these things and not do these things. And there's a stipend. There's something wrong about that. The emphasis, in other words, the emphasis on the law. That the problem, and just as it was with my problem over against Zorba, is my own human spirit. My problem over against how to be what a Christ man is, problem with my human spirit. It isn't that now I'm a Christian, I don't do these things. Although that something starting to happen. You know. And also I'm always in prison, aren't I? I'm my own jailkeeper. The point is that there, in a sense, is that, you know, they have the law written on the heart. And then, you know, it's a thing of the spirit. And then you live your life in a different way, but you find that these things aren't being done. But that is not the focus, that I don't do these things and I do these things and so forth. Then you're living a hireling, you know, mm-hmm. the law. I know that Christianity misinterpreted, has stomped the life out of many, many people.
The Grand Inquisitor was going to keep using the name of Christ and give the church as his needs. And we've done the same thing with Christianity. So many clients who wish to be more decided. Or there are people who want to manipulate more power and try to interpret that for us. We've lost the sense of the reality of us.
In some ways, we have interpreted what Christ has to say to his own death. And when he says, you know, that what he means when he says God and the devil, you really have to scratch your head and wonder. But it's, you know, God created everything ugly, you know, the devil created everything beautiful. God wants to stifle. But he contradicts himself, doesn't he? He's full of contradictions. Beautiful, the statement of the Lord. The Lord, be a Lord, one forgives, you know, the essence of being a Lord. A beautiful passage. But he's sort of cut himself free from God, and because it seemed like it was supposed to stifle the spirit, and I would say that it can free it. It frees passion rather than that. The answer is not to less love. The answer is more love. More love. And I think Christ, in everything that I read in the Gospels, is more love. That I keep from... We've talked about this in lifestyle before, but if I'm loving 360 degrees, if I really respond to just the sheer weight of those pillars, you know, as I even walk in, and you just, boom, and the sheen on those pillars back there, where people have touched them. You know, see, when you walk around that corner, people touch at the same place. Look, see it shine? That's body oil of 14 years right there, you know. And if you're sitting there responding to that kind of thing, color and shape and texture, with all the senses are alive, you don't end up starving to death so that I go run over to this widow lady over here and devour her. Because I've been snacking all day, I don't get that starved. Does that make any sense? That if I indeed am a passionate person and love it more, I think that's God's mystery. Some of the mystery God has for us. If I'm loving more, I don't do some of these things. Where? In what? With women?
With being passionate. Trying to see what it is that is wrong with the way he operates. When he has the passion.
Sorry, I don't yet know what you're...
Well, the love of the 360 degrees, the passion of even more than that. Well, was Oliver doing that, or was it not?
Well, he was doing that, but sometimes he didn't. He was doing that very often, but sometimes he wasn't. Sometimes he felt, I believe, like he had to do what the 20-year-old Zorba would have done. When he was 40, and he's 40 or 60, I think he was something like 60,
65.
Yeah. But that then, when with the woman consenting, the thing to do is to do what the 20-year-old Zorba would have done. One of the things the 20-year-old Zorba does is, you know, the statement, a tremendous statement about, you know, he cut his thumb off, and then boss tells him the story about this guy who's tempted, and he says, and he took an axe, and he says, no, he didn't do that. He says, yeah, but well, that passage, what is it? It's a really jolly good passage. Bad system, that Zorba, I said, smiling. It reminds me of the ascetic who, according to Golden Legend, once saw a woman who disturbed him physically, so he took an axe. Zorba, he didn't Zorba, he proposed, guessing that I was going to say, cut that off, the hell with the poor, benighted innocent. That's never an obstacle. But I insisted it can be a very great obstacle. To what? To your entry into the kingdom of heaven. Zorba glanced sideways at me with a mocking air and said, but you fool, that is the key to paradise. And then he goes on. He raised his head, looked at me closely, as if he wanted to see what was going on in my mind. Future lives, the kingdom of heaven will increase. But he did not seem to be able to gather much. He shook his great gray head guardedly. The maimed don't get into paradise. The maimed don't get into paradise. That, to me, that one line is one of the greatest lines. That's on, sorry, 18 and 19. The maimed don't get into paradise. I think that's something that not only Zorba says, but Trey says. Made them get in paradise.
What do you mean, made?
Made, and that's it. What Zorba meant was that this guy was going to cut his penis off, I guess. And then he was saying, the main don't get into paradise. Of course, there's an obvious literalness of that. But then there's a figurative sense, too. Not just sexually, but we can name ourselves. And this is back to what Bonnie was saying. I think that the tragedy of how Christianity has been interpreted, what we're supposed to do is name ourselves. We say, don't be angry. And so we cut off that which in ourselves is anger. And it's, we kill the baby out of the bathtub. It's the same, my thyroid, which makes me angry, also makes me excited. There's a passion involved. And we say, well, passion is bad. Passion is bad. Emotion is bad. Being emotional is bad. And I'll cut that off. And the thing is, we can do that. We can name ourselves. And then we don't do that nasty thing, but we also don't do all these really great things either. But the answer to, in terms of what we do, behave, is not name. And I think it's the devil that wants the word out that that's what God wants. Name, you know. Cut yourself off, because there's something in the creature in me that God created, not the rebellion figure, but God created me a person who, you know, there's something in me that is going to be rebelling against the sense that I have to name myself, and it isn't the devil that's causing me that rebellion. God never wanted that in the first place. Naming isn't the answer to living a life that's shalom for other people. But we do keep. We do keep thinking about that. Now, Zorba says, the main don't get in paradise. Did Zorba himself do any naming when he responded to a woman primarily in just sexual way? In what way?
Not, well, I can't say not considering your feelings, because I think he did consider your feelings. I mean, he never raped anyone, really.
No, he
hasn't. He said he had.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He said during the war he had. Yeah.
Well, then he asked me.
Yeah, but these others, not, huh?
He considered the
feelings
that he thought she had, but
he said, and here he gets horrified that they're going to cut his penis, the guy's penis off. And he does the exact opposite and cuts everything else off, and he considers it only in relation to that. You know, that he has a lot of feelings, but they're all connected to. I think he's pretty selfish with the physical.
Yeah. But there is this sense of he does a reverse meaning, you know. And cuts that part of woman which is much more than, I mean, woman is, you know, incredible mystery. And it's that thing I've said before. I'd rather know all of one woman than a hundred pieces of the same piece of a hundred. I'd rather know all of one woman than the same piece of a hundred. And in some ways, Sorba is saying that the thing to do in order to get into paradise is to know the same piece of a hundred. And if I ever respond to a woman that way only, I am naming. Does that make sense?
Why? just because you're not responding to her completely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a thing. It's not that I'm naming, you know, it's not that I'm one doesn't maim someone when one makes love, necessarily. But there's a way of responding to men and women which maim them. You know? And the crazy thing is, today, since life has become so flat for most people, there's more reality in being that peace than most of the day. In wasteland, remember? That wasn't much, you know, and I'm glad that's over, but it was more than the rest of her day was like. And the business of, oh, well, it's all right to consent. Is it all right to name someone who consents to be named? Is it all right to treat someone that somebody wants to be treated in a certain way? As it misinterprets the, you know, what being a woman is, and gives the feeling of being a woman, say, in intercourse, and you find somebody that wants to, is it all right to go ahead and run? It's a real question. Because I've met many, many women who think that the height of being a woman is, you know, in them. And the height of being a man is what happens in bed. And something like, you know, I think, you know, making love is more beautiful than that. And I guess that we keep thinking that the church says that this stuff isn't pleasure, this isn't beautiful, this isn't loving. Making love is fantastic. It's so much better than anyone has ever written. D.H. Lawrence just really is a poor second, you know. But, you know, that we can worship that and then make it much less than it is, too.
You know, though, it's difficult to relate to everyone completely. And maybe he's all about that, and one way that he really could relate to people is sexually. Could make him a family.
Yeah, that's right. And I can say, like, in some ways, you see, in many ways it's become hard to relate to people sexually. I mean, we think of it as a difficult thing, don't we? But it's very easy. You set foot on a raccoon coat, step into a gorilla's cage. That's not good. We become very self-conscious about it, but that isn't a difficult thing. When I have done that, what have I done? When I've done that, what have I done? It was exciting, you know, exciting and passionate perhaps in all of us in this instance, but what have I really done? I mean, was that the height of what it was to be men? Is that something that could take anything? It's interesting to know that, you know, for men it's interesting. I don't know if the women, I guess the story is different, but for men to know that, you know, when they're boys, they're more, if that's what it is to be a man, when they're boys, they're more men than ever again. You know, like around 12. You know, when a freight train full of hormones comes in overnight, you know, and it's just, there's that period where you're just playing, you know, sparks come off your things, you know. And from then on, it's downhill. But if that stuff is what it is to be a man, then I was a bit more of a man at 12 than ever since. He does get the feeling of expression and so forth here, but that is that, essentially organismic, you know. And once one gets past their neurosis, you know, I mean, given that a person isn't neurotic, that thing you don't even have, you can do that in your sleep. And do it. Do it all the time. So, we place it, we make it much bigger. I think that, and it is, now, that sense of naming, it goes on. Not that the part in the piece is bad, it's even more beautiful than 99% of people think. But it's the part. The point is that it's the part. And it's when one takes the part for the whole, what's that called? Psychological terms?
Fetish.
And this guy, Zorba, who looks so sane, does he have a fetish?
The boss does too.
Yes, sir.
I'm not sure he's still preoccupied. I'm not sure he would still be preoccupied with the same thing. There's sort of the acts of it. He describes a way that normally I can't afford, and he describes to the other things. Mostly relating to women's parts. So in a sense, it's like, just doesn't do what someone does, but it's still thinking of his pictures.
Well, his... It's different. I mean, you don't have him... I don't think Boss has put... Here's Zorba on the other, and here's Boss on the other, but that's Boss's finger. Show something, except that Boss gave up on rejected women completely back in the beginning of the book, before the book starts. He says, years ago, I left all that behind. And then later he is with the widow. And in a sense, when she... Well, gee, I hate that you haven't finished the book yet. Well, we might have talked on some things. Just, ooh. Anyway. You get... In the book, you do get Boss, early Boss, who feels like the answer, the way to get to paradise is to mate. That's what he thinks, to mate. What follows that passage right there is this shepherd thing, the Buddha's shepherd story. And the one guy says, I have all these things and I am happy, bring as much as you please. And the Buddha says, I don't need anything, I don't need anything. My meal is ready, I've milked my ewes, says the shepherd. The door of my hut is bolted, my fire is alight, and you, sky, can read as much as you please. Buddha answers, I have no longer need for food or milk. The winds are my shelter, the fire, my fire is out. And you, sky, can read as much as you please. And a really powerful thing there. You face life, and I don't... There is a fire. It keeps me warm. And I fear it's going out. And I put a roof over it. That's one way. Another way to be free from fear is to put the fire out. And you won't have to fear the rain is going to put the fire out. And that's a very Eastern sort of approach. Put the fire out in the first place. Then you don't have to be a living fear. The shepherd says, I have oxen, I have cows, I have my father's meadows, and the bull who covers my cows, and you can act as much as you please. Foolish says, I have neither oxen nor cows, I have no meadows, I have nothing. I fear nothing. And you can act as much as you please. The shepherd says, I have a dozen and faithful shepherds. For years she's been my wife. I'm happy when I play with her at night. And you can act as much as you please. Foolish says, I have a free and docile soul. For years I have trained it, and I have taught it to play with me. And you, Scott, can reign as much as you please. What is playing with yourself? Okay. But, in a sense, something you have here is I like the feeling of having no fear, and how do I get around to it? And I can get rid of everything, and that way I get the feeling, you know, I get rid of this bad feeling, because I've made everything nothing. So I have the feeling, but you have the content of fearlessness over against great loss. You don't want to suffer, don't love. But Boss is one who does name himself as the answer to getting into paradise. Kind of wrong at the beginning, but then he gives it up, doesn't he? That beautiful passage, if you're interested in Buddhism, and anybody, what Cousin Saka says about Buddha, the last man. The last man. And he sort of, he is to what it is to be a man is like pure poetry, but no longer a creature. So this is it. There. But you do see that, at least I see, maybe I'm wrong, but I do see Zorba in some ways at certain points in the story meaning himself and other people. Really made he can respond fully and passionately to part of what it is to be a woman. And since he responds so much better to that part than most men, it looks really good. But how many wives do we have? I married once, honestly. Twice, half honestly. And dishonestly, thousands of times. And as long as you keep moving, you never have to see that anymore. He gives the, I think, Bonnie, you said something about the selfish. Look on page 13. We're talking about playing the sun's earth. Look, I can see you don't play any instruments. What are you talking about? In the house, there are all your worries. The wife, the children, what are we going to eat? How should we manage clothes? What will become of us? Hell. No, to the centurion, you must be in good form. You must be cured. My wife says one word too many. How can I possibly be in the mood to play the centurion? Your children are hungry and screaming at you. You just try to play. Play the centurion, you have to give up everything. You understand? You've got to sacrifice to play the centurion. Who do you sacrifice? Your wife and your kids. Deep down. I mean, it's a half truth. It's true. I mean, Nancy isn't here now, I guess, but she wondered about the half truth. It's true. You do have to sacrifice to do something, play something well. But I don't push you in front of the arrow. I mean, you know, it's something to me that I have to sacrifice, but not sacrificing you. That's a very typical artist's rationalization. I know that I'm having lived in art community for 2 years before I came here. And really, there's a community of artists, hundreds of us together. And And that is, you hear that all the time.
The balance is only the decision that would be that the continually unsettled balance trying to find between what's sacrificing the family and what's sacrificing your art. And do you have a, don't you get pulled between the intentions?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you essentially always stay in that tension.
No, I haven't personally. The way I've done it is put it away for a while.
Well, it has to be like tension between the teaching.
Well, there's always tension, yeah. That's
so, tension. I mean, Zorba says you give up everything to play the song true. Everything to your family, and the healthy response is to live in the tension which is there instead of trying to ignore it.
I'm afraid to be big. No, really, that's an awful lot of it. And I see that I'm off, that I can't do this. Okay, Lord, make me bigger. Because the Holy Spirit can do more in 5 seconds than John Robert can do in 2 hours. So, Lord, if I write, let it be right the first time, so I don't have to spend all those hours in revision. And let the time that I'm with my wife be really with her, and the time that I'm with my children, I'm really there, rather than half there. John, I wish I was playing the country. But for being really there where you are, and really playing when you can't play, and you get the real experience, passionate experience of, say, in my case, with language, well, one thing I've done is getting in a situation where I'm trying to, where that love of language, then I'm not writing the poems, but that love of language is right there all the time now. I never used to talk. I talk so much here. Before I came here, I was a very silent person. I don't know. About like a kid, really. I started talking, actually, down in Iowa. But most of the time, I'm really quiet. And some of the tension of not being able to write and some of the passion for language is taken in other poems, which is in the margins of my books.
I have a thought here.
Yeah.
I can express this enough, but maybe Zorba is naming people because they are living in such an unnatural state of morality that they are allowing themselves to get named. Perhaps if everybody in his world was on his level, then no one would be named, and everybody would be into immediate gratification and be okay. But I mean, I think that we name each other all the time because we're living on so many, with so many rules and so many values. But he's so natural and so almost primitive, and I don't know if he doesn't seem like he... See, I don't know if this is a fetish or not. Maybe I kind of disagree with
that. Go ahead. Which is?
His sexual desires.
Oh, no. The desires are not fetishes at all.
Or sleeping with many different women.
That might not be a fetish in itself either.
What are you saying is a fetish?
You say that that's woman. You put all meaning, in the single part of a woman. You say woman is this.
Mm-hmm.
That making that conclusion is the fetish. Where you take part for the whole. That's this is the essence of the fetish, is to take apart from the whole. And in that sense, and he does do that, in that sense, it's a fetish. But sexual desire in itself is a premise. There's no conclusion about it. I mean, it's a fact. I think that sometimes we can think that we say that the desire is bad.
No.
How can it be bad? How can we say that something that is a, you know, is a fact, how can we then, just by its nature, put a moral evaluation on it? It isn't until, we don't do the moral evaluation until the conclusion's been made. But the fact of my desires, that's there. Now, it becomes bad or good or health or not health according to the conclusion I make from that premise. I felt that therefore I should go out and do this. That's where the moral and that's where the behavior and that's where Christianity comes in. On the conclusions. Now, when I left the church, it took me all of 14 years to say, how about this? It was when I thought that it was saying the thing was bad in itself. Christ never said that. I felt like Christ wanted me to deny life, deny the most passionate in life. But that very much leans over. I said, you're trying to lean me out of it. That's a lot of fun. I'm not going to lean myself. But Christ never asked me to lean myself.
So we put this on trip by ourselves.
We do. We really do.
Maybe this is what's happening with the characters that confused you. You know what I'm saying?
Keep going. The characters that Zorba deals with?
He sees women in one aspect. Well, that's what, that's what they are to him. And I guess I don't see that it's necessarily bad if it's, if everyone else, if the women there were not hung up on or on getting themselves hurt. If they could see men like that, well then everything would be okay.
Yeah. It would, and kind of remembering this thing, it would be okay. there's an okayness about it. There wouldn't be conflicts between the characters. And there weren't. See, in the rest of the book, Zorba doesn't have conflicts with these women. The women that he's taking to bed all the time want him to take them to bed. Mm-hmm. And there's no question about this. There's no conflict. They don't want any more than he does. In some cases, maybe. But it's essentially they don't think of themselves as much more than what Zorba thinks of them. You see? And so there isn't any, I mean, they're consenting.
Right.
Okay, Zorba and these women are consenting adults. I mean, what we'd call consenting adults. That's true. It's true, because he doesn't rape anybody except in the war or something. That's just, you hear that word in a line, and that isn't part of it. I mean, that just spills out of his mouth with other things, like he, killing.
And you're saying that they're naming each other, even though they are consenting adults. I disagree.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I guess I look at it like I can be good rules to a person, or I can be no rules to a person, or bad news to a person.
But then you're getting bad news.
Or exciting news to a person.
Makes sense.
There are values involved. I mean, I would say, like, if you want me to treat you as less than I see you, I shouldn't go ahead even if you beg me. if I wasn't aware that you were any more than you think you are, I might feel fine about, you know, relating to you any way you want, but still, we would be being less than we really are. But we wouldn't be aware of
But you would no.
No way, yeah. No way.
I can see what you're saying. I don't know, but your values are getting mixed up in that. You know, that's fine. But I don't know if Zelda. The only value that I saw him having was immediate gratification. And if everybody else had that too, well then, what's Ryan Lee hung up about his life?
Because it's he isn't midwifing anybody. Sense that there is no deep calling out to deep. There's the news to the widow. But I don't think you could say good news. It was really exciting when you went to the widow. You know, I don't think you could really say that it was a good news thing. It wasn't that. Widow found anything out that would keep her from the next time being in the same situation. Because it's not something that you talk about in terms of value. And you don't talk about it in terms of not being valuable, even though it's not valuable. It doesn't enter into that realm of the moral realm, the valuable realm. It's there. It's just a fact. It's a fact about things. I don't value it because it's a fact. Just because it's a fact. It only becomes valuable to go with that insofar as it is measurable over against a sum standard of what is good and health and wholeness from the outside. And if I am one who believes there is such a thing, then I begin talking in terms of value. And I do think that certain ways of responding to people are more valuable than others. Depends on what, if I do have a call to be, to bring the people that I'm with to wholeness, then I have been in situations where women wanted me to do. I was 7 months at 18. 18 or 19, and this one gal, really nice, you know, I mean, all the superficial areas. And she wanted me to have, she didn't want to marry me, but she wanted me to be the father of the child. And, well, that was a lot of conversation that night, with people down in East Camp. But the sense that what she wanted, and it was for my ego, oh boy, it was really good for my ego, because she shopped around. She really wanted a child, but she didn't want to marry. So all the vanity was certainly, was already taken care of. The ego was already taken care of and everything. And I just said, this is crazy. What you want? I didn't say that. We did talk. We talked for a long time. And I said, you know, can't do that. It isn't just what you want or what I want. There's a life involved, a child involved, and I would have a specific relationship to that child, a specific responsibility to that child that could not be met. And I wouldn't want to start the child off in life on that shaky foundation and things like that. There are other realms. That all she was intelligent, she wasn't crazy, she wasn't depraved, she was intelligent, sensitive, an artist, and all this stuff. But I thought through the whole thing, and I said, well, your conception of what a child is, it's not there. You know? I want one, I'll go out and get one. The conception of what a child is got to be big. The conception of what a father is, although your father might not have been much, you know, what a father is, really, it's a tremendous thing, although most fathers don't ever come up to that. But it's a huge thing. And what she felt she was smaller than she really was. And you can't in that situation call, maybe say, that's wrong. How could you? You know, all that kind of thing. But she had a conception of what men were too, and that was too small. It was too small. By having her meet someone who was very attracted to her, I was very attracted to her, you know, physically and all this kind of stuff, very attracted, very, we've gone together before. And so it wasn't any of those reasons. There wasn't any lack of passion or anything, but I said no. Out of no fear. But that didn't necessarily make any difference in that girl's life. And in this case, it didn't. But it could have. She could have met someone. Her conception of what a man was could have grown bigger than the one where it was at the time. And the growth of what it was to be a man, what she had a definition of what men were, and she was surprised that it wasn't, she couldn't categorize it, you know, throw that away as all the guy, you know, some sort of interest. None of that. You know. She was attracted to it. There was that sense of nothing. That isn't needed. You know, that's, you would be doing less than you are, you know, being less than you are. And I would be less than you, less than I am. And the child would have two people, you know, less than, and be without a father. Well, that could have been good minister. She didn't want it, she was disappointed, didn't want it, but she could have either said, huh, maybe I'll ever think about this again, think about what it is, what a man is. Or she could say, the guy's crazy. And she said the latter. But it could have been. My goodness. One doesn't necessarily have to go along with the desire, and that not going along with the desire can indeed be better and more formidable, rather than for agreeing to play a part with it, to be a part of it. One thing you do get in the book is, what is Zorba's, how much does Zorba respect what it is to be a man, or a woman, or just mankind in general? Well, what's his respect for man? Does he have one? And I guess that's some of what I'm talking about, Bonnie, about the respecting man. I guess much of what I feel is the case is that it's important for me to respect other people more than they respect themselves. And to see in them much more than they normally see. Because really, I'm the only person that can see you first. You can't. And then to call that out, it's a whole different volume. Good pun. Wonderful. Does that make any sense on the difference?
It does. I can see, you know, your values being what they are, and erasing those. If you, okay, say you're in that situation and you have a great deal of respect for her and for the child it could be and for yourself, well, then it certainly would be wrong to sleep with him.
Would be
wrong.
Yeah.
To sleep with him. But Zorba, he doesn't have your values, he's not. And the woman.
A good 90% of me wanted to do it. You know, in the sense, if I took a good democratic vote and I says, okay, Roberts, let's vote on this. And she went, nice. in the 19-year-old, nice, okay. But, you know, it wasn't that I was, oh yes, I don't have this. No, 90% of me wanted it. My goodness, in talking about she wants it, so I know there's absolutely nothing to fear. You know, absolutely nothing to fear. 90% of me just cheering, go for it, you know. I mean, there is that Zorba's, and that's the majority.
But Zorba, it's 100%. All I can think about is how good it's going to feel, and maybe the same thing. She doesn't have to be pregnant.
He doesn't do them, yeah, then they can, but they don't make any difference in each other's lives.
That's right.
It's a zero.
No. It's not a zero.
No, it's a very exciting zero.